Welcome to the Rennie Podcast, where we talk about the real estate market and the people connected by it. Our goal is to empower you to make informed decisions and provide context for the real estate world around you. We hope that with every episode, you will become a little more knowledgeable and a lot more curious.
Hi there, I'm Ryan Berlin, Rennie's head economist and vice president of intelligence, and I'm here with Ryan Wise, Rennie's market intelligence manager and lead analyst within our intelligence division. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Super. Today, Mr. Wise and I are very excited to be joined by Rob Breckwald, who has been a realtor for 14 years, a Rennie advisor for the past 3 years, and a Rennie leader in 2023, which means he's really good at helping people buy and sell homes. And Rob, your family moved to Kelowna a couple of years ago, and you're now working with clients in both the Okanagan and here in the Lower Mainland, Tri-Cities, Maple Ridge, and Langley.
Yeah.
Awesome. How was the drive in this morning? You drove all the way in just to record this podcast from Kelowna to Vancouver.
Yeah, I drove in, took about 4.5 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a drive.
So 3.5 hours was in the Fraser Valley coming in.
Yeah. Chilliwack to here, 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
During rush hour.
I make that drive a lot. The one nice thing on the way out, you know, they've been adding lanes in certain sections of Langley. You get an extra lane a little further going eastbound right now as they've opened it up, I think, almost to 264th. So you get a little further before you feel that pinch point on the way home.
Which is useful if you're exiting when there are additional lanes because your trip is smoother. But like they got to push that all the way through. I assume that that's the plan.
It is the plan, but it's like I think it's a 7-year plan. It'll be a while.
Right.
Looks like a long plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great traffic chat. It's
great. Well, the traffic radio station closed down.
I know.
So yeah, we're doing our part.
Yeah, we're just letting everyone know.
Yeah. If you're coming in from Kelowna,
yeah,
give yourself some extra time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every day.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what we really want to talk about. So in today's episode, we do want to spend some time talking about housing inventory because there's so much of it right now, especially in the Kelowna market, the greater Kelowna area. And then after that, we'll talk about the latest inflation data, which is hot off the presses, and we'll talk about what that means for the Bank of Canada's upcoming rate decisions. So let's start with you, Mr. Wise.
All right.
Bloating inventory has been a feature of markets here in BC and across Canada for many, many months now. We've talked about it a lot. We've been tracking the data for a long time. So there's nothing really new there. But in Kelowna, the situation is, I don't know what the right word is, it's more extreme. It's an outlier market when it comes to supply. So what can you tell us about supply dynamics in that market?
Yeah, sure. Let's throw some context. So in this, we'll call it the central Okanagan area. So effectively that's Peachland up to Lake Country, Kelowna, West Kelowna in between. There's more than 3,100 active listings as of the end of June, which obviously is a lot smaller than here in Vancouver. But some, you know, context, that's more than all the listings available in Greater Victoria, which is roughly double the population of the Central Okanagan. It's 50% more than this time last year. It's 40% more than that past decade average. And it's the highest June in about a decade. So more homes available for sale than we've seen in a really, really long time in this market. And even as, like you said, we talked about how much inventory has grown across markets, this one really stands out for how much is available on the market.
So the question is, the big question is, why?
So it's all home types, which is interesting. So detached homes, townhome condos, all of them are more than 40% above their long run average. So we see it across home types. But we see in Kelowna, like in other markets, investors are really being squeezed right now, partly due to a period of sustained high interest rates, partly because of a lot of the new policies that we've discussed a lot on this podcast in past episodes. And so some of that like is condo investors who maybe wanted to buy short-term rentals who are now listing, but also recreational buyers too, I imagine, or recreational property owners. It's a lot of, there's a larger component in that market of people with either secondary homes or investment properties than maybe some other markets. And Rob, I imagine that's a big part of why there are more listings, relatively speaking, in that market.
Yeah, there's just a lot of change happening there. And it's interesting like to see it across all home types because I think those are all different types of people doing different kind of type of things, right? So it seems quite consistent over all product types, even down to investor right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's interesting to just see it all unfold, right? Because there was kind of a big buildup of change. Traditionally, the market is sort of in its flow state right now, quite sort of balanced with the exchange of selling and buying. But mm-hmm. right now it just seems majority is inventory growth.
And so I know, Rye, you have some data that you can share that sort of speaks to the investor segment of the market, sort of alludes to it, if not getting directly at it. But Rob, for you, for people who are listing their home right now, like how, just your observation, this isn't holding your feet to the fire, but like what is the, how many investors versus owner occupiers, end users are you seeing as wanting to sell right now? Because it seems to me like whatever that mix is, they probably have different reasons.
Yeah, what's interesting in the Okanagan market is there's so many reasons and why you would be there. Like where, you know, where if I would reflect more in my business on the coast here, especially in the Tri-Cities and Maple Ridge and such, it's primarily, that's your primary end user, right? So I find the Okanagan market is really dynamic and a lot of the policy change and then I think just the change that people are desiring is influencing them to either, you know, move away, downsize. Like, and what's interesting is I find a lot of people are maybe moving from the Okanagan to the island is what I've seen too, just given some of the climate changes. Mm. So another feeding dynamic that wasn't there.
Well, that's an interesting thing that we actually haven't talked about in advance of this, but the fires from last summer. I mean, to what extent does that impact the psyche of people that are already in that market or who were thinking about moving there and then go, maybe it's too risky?
I think it's real. Like, not for everybody, but I think it depends what your risk threshold is, right? It's definitely, you know, we had a fire in Peachland like a week ago, and it really brought back the West Kelowna fire for me personally. I was just like, oh yeah, we're here. Like, this is real. But, you know, and then you talk to people that have been there for a long time and it just doesn't even faze them. Right. So it just depends.
And I think we went that area went 20 years without a fire. Right.
Yeah.
So there was a big gap. And there's obviously cycles in that stuff. But I know, Rye, you were looking at some per capita sales data, which tells kind of an interesting story for Kelowna versus other markets.
Yeah. So we compared sort of that, again, that central Okanagan versus Victoria, Vancouver. And if you look at sales historically on a per capita basis, you can see a clear difference in that Kelowna market versus the other two, much higher per capita sales, about 25% higher historically. If you look at, say, 2014 to 2022, that surplus shrank last year as, you know, during that high interest rate environment. And then it's basically on par with Victoria and Vancouver now in 2024, as that sort of recreational buyer is largely absent, or, you know, a mix of recreation and investor buyers. So we can sort of measure that component is about 25% of that sales activity in that market is likely that additional sort of recreation or investor or combination buyer. I imagine mm-hmm. a lot mm-hmm. of those buyers too are, you know, they wanted Airbnb part-time, mm-hmm. use it in the summer, that sort of thing. And mm-hmm. they've really pulled back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Like, agree with you totally. What's interesting is that there's still a lot of people that want to use for recreational there. And I think it all depends when they maybe acquired.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you've acquired recently at a higher price point, you needed to subsidize with the Airbnb.
Right.
So you struggle to hold that without that. Whereas if you've maybe held it generationally, there's less debt to mm-hmm. service there. But still, interesting enough, I've seen a lot of listings come up that's, you know, first time to market, first time in decades, like, you know, this has been generationally owned and now coming to market. So it's interesting for me to try to figure out, is that influenced by policy or just organic aging, you know, and interest, yeah, right?
Exactly. And I guess as you look at the market, we talked about this previously, the dynamics in that region seem to be different from what you've observed in the past. And so, like, do you think that we're entering, like, is what we're seeing right now with the shift away from some investment, all these listings, not a lot of buying activity, the first time to market for, you know, a handful or a selection of properties there, is this a paradigm shift or is this just sort of like a point in an abnormal cycle, in your opinion?
OK, Can I say both?
Say whatever you want.
Yeah, I feel there's some traditional factors, and then there's some new factors that have been injected to the marketplace, and we're just adapting. But the market is just adapting, and I don't really know what is going to happen, you know, how that's going to look. But I think it is creating some opportunity for sure, right? Like if you look at it and you're like, this is sort of what's happening. Okay, like, you know, even going through the numbers, right? Like those are big numbers for the region for inventory, but the market didn't move when there was no inventory. So it's interesting to see it sort of just slowly move with inventory. It's like, isn't this like what we wanted? Like, isn't this what people wanted?
Yeah, I think we wanted it, but for different reasons. Yeah. And that underlying reason is more recently, I think, policy impacting the investor segment, but high interest rates. And that's actually what we wanted to pivot to next by way of talking about inflation, which has been more or less declining steadily over the past couple of years since it peaked at just over 8% in the summer of 2022. But since the calendar flipped this year to 2024, the inflation story, at least as it relates to the potential for interest rate cuts, has gotten pretty juicy, right? So we feel like we've had one cut. We talked about that on the last episode. But why don't you, Ryan, talk to us about what you're seeing in the very latest inflation data, which were just released, and what that means now for, let's say, the balance of the year as it relates to rates.
Yeah, so we just got June data. So headline inflation was down to 2.7% from 2.9% in May. It's probably a good thing that the Bank of Canada's calendar just so happened that the next announcement is on July 24th, and it wasn't a couple of weeks earlier, because that May inflation data didn't look as great. That's now six consecutive months, all the months in 2024, where inflation is within the Bank of Canada's target range of 1% to 3%. Great news. And then the biggest contributor last month to sort of that decline was gasoline. So gas prices really fell month to month in Canada. But that wasn't the only thing declining. It wasn't just like, oh, gas is the reason. And, you know, gas is super volatile, so ignore everything else. All of the major components of inflation, except for food, which obviously is a big one, declined month to month as well. That rate did. We've been seeing this all year of sort of a broad-based decline. Shelter is the big outlier still. It's being driven by rents and high interest rates. But everything else has been pretty steadily declining. All the core measures of inflation the Bank of Canada really cares about, they're all within that 1% to 3% target range. I think overall, this is really sort of a positive thing for consumers. Whether you're a borrower or not, we're really seeing the prices get back towards that 2% target, more stable price growth. And I think there's a lot of other metrics that kind of go alongside that. And whether you're looking at job vacancies declining, whether you're looking at the unemployment rate rising, which obviously isn't necessarily a good thing, except as it relates to inflation. Wage growth is slowing. Retail spending is declining on a population adjusted basis. GDP is declining on a population adjusted basis. And I think all of this leads to July 24th. And I think there's a really, really solid case for another cut. I would be shocked if there wasn't one. We're predicting a cut of another 25 basis points.
Which we weren't. We feel confident as of this recording.
Yes.
Prior to the inflation data for June having just been released, we were a little more 50-50. Mm-hmm. But that really feels like the nail in the coffin for current interest rates.
Yeah, I would say the one outlier was May inflation data. And so June sort of corrected that one sort of concerning point. And I think now the totality of evidence points towards another cut.
Then what about if we look ahead beyond that? So every month inflation data is released, and we are absolutely obsessed with these data releases. Mm-hmm. The Bank of Canada meets, you know, once every month and a half, roughly. So we, before every meeting, we have one or two releases of a whole slew of data, including inflation. What are you expecting for the next release, which will come out mid-August, reporting for July?
Yeah, so we already know a little bit about what we can expect there. The first thing to consider is what happened at this time last year. So last year, from June to July, we actually saw a big increase in the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. And so we have what we call a base year effect, where even if prices increase a little bit month to month this year, that will bring headline inflation down. If we get a similar reading to last month where prices declined month to month, we would see a big drop in inflation. So I expect a drop in the rate of inflation next month, leading into that next Bank of Canada meeting, which would be September 5th. And then, you know, through 2 weeks as of recording, we're looking at a few metrics. Oil prices are down, gas prices are flat, food prices, wheat prices are down. A lot of things are pointing towards a pretty substantial...
Rents are flat. They seem to be fairly flat.
Yeah. So I think overall, I'm expecting a pretty sizable decrease in overall inflation next month as well.
I mean, that might mean, so if we're at 2.7 now, we could very realistically end up at below 2.5% as an annual headline inflation rate next month, which would be the lowest in, gosh, 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And really put us a lot closer to that ultimate target that the Bank of Canada has of 2% inflation. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that sort of lays the groundwork then for the remainder of the year, where we're still expecting three more 25 basis point cuts.
Yes, out of four more announcements. So we're predicting three cuts, one hold for the remainder of the year and finishing the year at a 4% policy rate, which is still quite restrictive. That's, I think, another thing to remind everyone is a 4% policy rate is really quite restrictive overall and not where the Bank of Canada ultimately wants to end up at the end of this cycle.
Question. What's interesting to me since joining Rennie and, you know, having access to this data is that I didn't track this previously. Like, I didn't have access to it, didn't understand it. And so if you were to look pre sort of, you know, when the rate initially dropped, sort of deal with what we were dealing with at the times. Like if you look from like 2010 to 2020 and stuff like that, did you announcements tracking, how much did you pay attention to that then versus now? Like, is it like hyper, like analyzing all the time versus before you could kind of, it was just sort of making its way?
So prior to COVID literally threw so many things, different metrics and measures and data points off the chart, literally off the chart, where we are augmenting the axis on charts to accommodate these extreme data points. Mm. Because even during periods of regular, you know, economic cycles where you have ebbs and flows and activity, you know, it tends to be fairly moderate. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these metrics, like whether we're talking about retail spending, GDP, employment, the unemployment rate, inflation, you know, they just sort of almost like waves lapping up on the shore early in the morning. It's just very sort of like consistent up and down, not much to see there. So like if we look back prior to 2020 at the inflation data, you know, for 15 years, you know, the average inflation rate monthly was like 1.9%. It didn't deviate very much. Yeah. You know, you might get a reading, it's 2.1 and then it's 1.6 and then it's 1.8 and 2.2. And it didn't move the needle for anyone. The point for the bank is our prices growing at a stable rate, and they were. And then everything kind of got thrown out the window. So it changed. We were not tracking. We weren't obsessed with all of these data releases every month the way that we are now.
Yeah, I would just add, like, I watched Bank of Canada press releases when I got to them. So I knew generally when they were coming out, and, you know, maybe they raised the policy rate from 1.5 to 1.75 or something like that. I didn't follow inflation. I learned about it in school, and then I promptly forgot about it up until 2020, where we got into it. I certainly wasn't refreshing the StatsCan website at 5:30 in the morning on the day that inflation was released, like we do now.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm like, as you're saying, like I was like a headline guy. Like I'd read the headline, but I wouldn't read the article. Mm-hmm. Now I'm like the whole article, have some understanding of what's going on. And I think that's so important to understand the bigger picture, as, you know, again, distill it down into your marketplace and how that's affected and understanding it. I think it allows you to have some sort of foresight into potentially the outlook of things. And so I just look at it as like a chart, and the ebb and flow being very tight, 2010, 2020, and then from 2020 to, like, you know, say even the beginning of this year, first quarter, it's just like mountain, peaks, valley, peak, valley. Mm-hmm. And then so I guess like on a chart, are we just looking for that gap now to sort of fuse and sort of be a little bit more streamlined and not so large of a, you know, peak and valley?
Absolutely. And I think everything we're seeing in our, well, a lot of what we're seeing in our housing market and throughout the economy is a reflection of what inflation is doing, because inflation, you know, when it's rising or high, initiates or has initiated a response from the Bank of Canada through the one real lever that they have, which is to change interest rates. And so they've looked to quell inflation. But when you slow inflation, what you're really doing is you're creating hardship in the economy. You're trying to incentivize savings. The bank, they're trying to discourage spending. Don't eat out at restaurants as much, right? Don't borrow money to go on trips, which is probably good advice generally. But the point is to slow the economy, and that's what they've been doing. And now we're talking about this soft landing, where we have seen the unemployment rate rise in Canada from about 5% to 6.4% most recently over the past year or so. The goal really here would be to not have that rise much further and also achieve inflation of 2%. And once we get there, we can moderate interest rates and get back into a bit of a steady state economy, which creates a lot more certainty for all the participants in the economy and in the housing market. Because I think right now, whether you're a buyer, a seller, developer, investor, whatever, the uncertainty of where are rates going to go? How far are they going to go? When are they going to go? What's inflation going to look like? It's kind of paused activity because people aren't comfortable yet that we are in a known environment. And I think we'll be there in the next 18 months. Mm-hmm. So on that point, actually, I had a question for you, Rob, as it relates to interest rates, because we know if we talk about the investor set as an example, many of them are on variable rate mortgages. And as interest rates started to rise in 2021, a lot of investors weren't comfortable making that jump over to a fixed rate, because as variable rates were rising, fixed rates were also rising. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a hesitancy to lock in at a higher rate. So, and that also goes for owner occupiers, where people just got stuck on that variable rate train and now have ridden rates all the way to their peak. And now they're starting to come off. But I think for investors that are maybe listing their property today, because from a cash flow perspective, they might be hugely in the red thanks to rising interest rates. What's your sense for, just in your experience talking with clients, how much of an interest rate decline would be material for people to either jump back into the market or, as sellers, maybe reconsider listing their property on account of interest rates?
Great question. And I think it's so unique to each individual investor and their needs, but generally, for sure, people are feeling it, right? The cost to borrow has gone up. The cost to hold that property has gone up. Everything from maintenance to anything to keep a taxation, everything has gone up. And, you know, things are being capped to what you can charge. So they're kind of being squeezed from both sides, right? And so I think from an investor's perspective, I think it goes back to, like, how long have they held the asset for? Mm-hmm. Like, do they want to liquidate? Mm-hmm. What are they going to do? I think, you know, an investor in sort of the pre-sale, that's been an interesting one, because the environment and such was much different when they sort of went forward with the commitment of it. And now it's changed drastically, right? And so I think we're in a state where, yes, some stuff has come to market. Definitely started to see a lot of requests for assignments and such. But what I always say to the, you know, if someone inquires with me, you know, they want to assign a property, I say, you're assigning it because, you know, you're squeezed, whether it's a rate or whatnot, or you just don't want to proceed, you're not confident or whatnot, but you're kind of selling it to the same person. You're kind of selling it to you. So the person looking has the same thought process. So does it have to be perceived as a deal for them to commit right now? Right. So it's almost like, you know, talking to a seller or talking to a buyer, I almost always switch it and be like, let's get into the mind space of the opposite and look how they would look at what we're positioning, right? And then people are like, huh, you're right. And so again, then I go back to, what are your needs? Do we need to get rid of it? Do you want to get rid of it? Or if you completed on it, what would that look like, right? So yeah, definitely a lot of different reasons to why an investor may want to keep or offload.
Right. Okay, Rob, a few minutes ago, you said that you used to just read the headlines, but now you read the whole article. And that is a tremendous segue into our next section that we call Beneath the Headline, where we cherry pick a housing-related news story that would benefit from a little more context. So The headline that we've chosen today is Metro Vancouver single family home prices are soaring, says report. Ryan Wise, please provide some context to that because it doesn't feel like prices are soaring right now.
I would argue that they aren't. And the sub headline to this article is that home prices expected to increase 5.5% in Q4, which hopefully they're suggesting on an annualized basis, but it doesn't explicitly say that.
I would assume so.
So again, this article goes on to say some pretty big price gains, average prices in the city of Vancouver and Metro Vancouver. So one of the first things I would start with is average prices tend to fluctuate a lot. So any point in time, you can cherry pick your own large price changes. So we like to use benchmark prices as the best barometer for how values are changing mm-hmm. over time. So if I go and pull benchmark prices for the Vancouver board area for detached homes, they are up 3.7% year over year, but they're still almost 2% below their peak from 2022. If we look at the west side of Vancouver, you know, they're up 4% from last year, but they're still below their peak from 2022. Same thing on the east side, they're up about 1%, down almost 3% from their peak. And yes, detached home values are rising faster than condo values mm-hmm. are right now in the Vancouver region, but that's because they fell off a lot more from 2022 and into 2023. So yes, values are increasing, but they're still lower than they were 2 years ago.
And I think if you look back historically in this region at average year-over-year benchmark price gains, it comes out around 3% through the ups and the downs of the market. Mm-hmm. And so when we look here at more recently for detached properties in Metro Vancouver or parts of it coming in slightly above that, it's tough to call that soaring, especially with the context of where those prices are coming
they
from.
They are recovering a little bit faster.
Recovering prices, yes.
Yes, how I would say it.
All right. Thanks for that context, Rye. All right, finally, as we wrap up here, we'd like to take a question from a listener of this podcast. We have one today from Charles.
Hi, folks. We've all been hearing the cocktail talk for months and months now of people waiting on the sidelines for interest rates to drop before making any real moves in our market. Given that we know interest rates aren't going to be falling that quickly in the next year, I was wondering if we might start seeing more market activity driven by people who have been waiting on the sidelines but need to move regardless of rates, starting families, upsizing, downsizing, entering the market for the first time. I guess I'm asking if this could be a bit of a catalyst for increased activity. Or do you think people are going to continue to wait and that rates will be the dominant factor in our market activity? With that said, would love to hear any other factors that you think could keep driving the market. The focus has been so heavily on interest rates lately that I think it's interesting to consider the other major factors that drive our real estate market. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks to Charles for that question. Rob, do you want to have a go at responding?
I think maybe segue into pent-up demand, which where does pent-up demand come from? And it would be pressures on housing, space, need, financial. Like I think it surrounds a lot of money talk all the time, the rates, what can I sell for, what can I buy for. Yeah, that but is your baby, you're in the primary room with you, and you know, are you need more space, do you need to downsize, are you ready to retire, do you want to travel? Like I think there is a lot of that pent up sort of demand. How will it unfold? I guess only time will tell.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of reporting out of the U.S. about the lock-in effect of higher interest rates in the States. And part of that is a function of they have a different mortgage market down there. Most owners are on a 30-year fixed rate, and they're not able to port their mortgage or move their mortgage to a new property. So if you do sell and move to a new property, you are essentially taking out a mortgage at current rates. And that tends to then, because that's prohibitively expensive for so many people, it tends to lock them in place. And I haven't heard the lock-in effect applied to Canadian markets, but I definitely think people are delaying purchase decisions. And I think, I mean, this is not based on any kind of scientific evidence, but I do think, you know, over time, there's at the margin, some of that pent-up demand will unpent, maybe because the need is so great. Like Rob, as you say, you know, maybe the circumstances in your home are such that you can only live that way for so long, but you also have to have the financial means ultimately to make that move. And so, you know, I think for some people who have the greatest need to move and maybe after holding off on a purchase for a few years, you know, recognizing that the labor market has been pretty strong and wages have been growing pretty reasonably well over the last few years, that combined with maybe some growing income at the margin, there is a sliver of that pent-up demand that is able to unpent over time just simply due to a desire to change living circumstances.
Yeah, I would say these, you know, these situational buyers and sellers are why you see sales and transactions every month, regardless of what the market is doing. Even in, you know, December of 2008, there were deals happening because people needed to buy and sell homes. And I think ultimately rates are still going to be the biggest factor, but some, like to your guys' point, some people need, you know, they had a baby, they need more space, or they changed jobs, they need to move cities. Like those buyers and sellers will always be there.
Definitely. And I do think, just maybe as a final thought on this, like in theory, we talk about increased activity, we're usually talking about the demand side of the market ledger as opposed to the supply side, because there's definitely been more activity supply wise. But, you know, in theory, again, incomes that are rising faster than they have been, like, you know, call it a 10% year over year increase, where that really has a material impact on purchasing power for buyers, or where we see the employment grow strongly, or the unemployment rate, the proportion of people that are employed fall. You know, in theory, those things could stimulate demand. But what we're seeing on the income and wage front is that wage growth is slowing. And we know that high interest rates are largely the reason for that. High interest rates are also constraining the labor market and leading to a rising unemployment rate, as we talked about earlier. I think there's not a lot on the demand side that will realistically stimulate the market in advance of material interest rate cuts.
Yeah, I would just add that, and we just talked about how values have been rising, prices have been recovering in a period of high rates, so purchasing power has gotten less. Buyers can afford less home than they could a few years ago. And so we don't expect prices to fall again. So the only sort of lever for increased purchasing power is lower interest rates.
I have a thought. It was really interesting. Yeah. You said it the other, when we were on the phone yesterday, sort of figuring out when the purchase power comes back. We talked about, say, like we forecast 18 months out and, you know, the drop in interest rates, say the benchmark pricing stays sort of consistent, which it is today, rates drop. And then again, what's interesting, because I reflect back when the rates were really low, it was purchasing power. And what I always said, it was interesting, was like, if you say, you know, when people are offering $200,000 over asking or whatever, if you earn that money, I think you would have spent it differently. If you got it from the bank at a low rate, you're spending it differently. If you got it from someone, you're spending differently. So it's interesting to see now, as the money gets cheaper, what's the relationship, you know, buyers have with money like that? Like, are they going to just be like, okay, well, now I can, just because you can afford to pay more, are they going to pay more?
That's a great point, because I actually think that buyers are going to be more gun shy to leverage themselves as much as they had been, because there was a belief previously that rates would be low in perpetuity. And there was a shock to the system, which was COVID and inflation and a Bank of Canada response. And so what we've seen is that things can happen and rates can increase. And I think now that was our once in a generation reminder that, you know, you need to be prudent when you are spending your money.
The one counter to that, I suppose, would be the stress test says you're qualifying at a much greater rate than you're actually borrowing. And so you're essentially, that buffer has been built in for you. So I think a lot of buyers would still max what they're ultimately borrowing because they're getting stress tested higher.
Interesting about the stress test. Do we feel, or how much of that maybe saved? Like, I don't know if saved the market is a big, maybe a big headline, but you know, how is it coming out now, seeing like, wow, like, 'cause before it was slightly annoying.
Really annoying.
Right? Like totally annoying. And now I reflect on it, or during the last 2-3 years, I was like, wow, that was important.
We've looked at this in the past, but essentially for the last little while, average, call it average discounted fixed rates are roughly 2 percentage points higher than they were 5 years ago. So the majority of borrowers, about two-thirds, take on fixed. The bulk of them, especially pre-pandemic, were taking five-year fixed. So on average, people are renewing at a rate they were previously stress tested to.
Wow.
So they were absolutely saved at in aggregate. I mean, some borrowers could probably would have afforded it otherwise, others couldn't have. But I think as a group, that absolutely helped.
And then you overlay that on top of over 5 years, hopefully paying down your outstanding balance, and over that period, on average, likely seeing wage growth.
Right.
So your ability to pay is greater.
Yeah. So we're in a situation now where all these borrowers who borrowed in 2019, by the way, those are those renewers today, they're spending more on their mortgage as they renew. They're spending less everywhere else, probably. So, you know, that is disinflationary. That all these renewers are going to keep changing their spending patterns. Maybe they've started already, or maybe they're waiting for their renewal. But we'll see, you know, more money just going to service debt and less money at going out for dinner, coffee shop, things like that.
And over to you, Rob, for final thoughts.
I think it's aligning now where you have choice and opportunity with some product that you wouldn't have had before. So everybody would come to Kelowna and they'd be like, I want the house with the view and the pool. And I'd always have to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, that's just like, you can have one or two of those. Now you're starting to see inventory rise, and of that, you know, that real Okanagan property that everybody is sort of desiring is opening up.
Especially considering how much Kelowna has been growing and has been the fastest growing metropolitan region in the country over the past decade. And so some of those people are already in Kelowna and maybe are renting because there wasn't enough supply, there wasn't enough choice. And so maybe that is, you know, part of the demand side of the equation that could become unpent in the coming years.
Yeah, I feel everybody talks, they're frustrated because there was no inventory before. The inventory's opened up. Like, you have choice, you have time. You can come look at the house, you can look at it again, and you can make it's a big move. Many people are moving from somewhere else, and this is very new to them. You can come, you can experience it, you can spend the weekend, you can really live it, right? And you can look at different places and different areas, and you can go back and look at it. So I think the process of decision-making is amazing right now.
Okay, Rob, it's been awesome having you here. Really appreciate you making the trek from Kelowna to be here today. Before we sign off, how can listeners get in touch with you?
Yeah, I can be always reached direct. My number is 778-990-0866. Can always, you know, have Rennie website as well. Can always check out the listings and reach out direct there. Also, if anyone's interested, we have great data content. Rennie Review for Kelowna specifically. I personally feel there's never been this type of data available in the region. So whether you live in the region, whether you're considering the region, whether you're an investor, this is really powerful stuff. So feel free to reach out.
Thank you for joining us on the Rennie podcast. If you'd like to learn more, all resources mentioned in the episode can be found at rennie.com/intelligence. To be the first to receive this information, register for intelligence updates.